All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. You are now tuned in to another great edition of Ulwazi. We are joined by none other than the man himself. That is Mr. Francisco Neshila, the seasoned urbanist, the all-knowing when it comes to, you know, land and property development. So, Mr. Neshila, how are you doing this Saturday morning?
It's a wonderful Saturday morning. We're good to go. The weather looks good here in the capital city, and we're just here to unpack our development strategy, what people mm-hmm. could look out for. We are also inviting those guys who want to do some marketing on the platform of Ulwazi, especially in the development place. Please come on board. Our numbers are picking up on social media, and we make sure that we'll give you the perspective and the market that you want to capture, and which is equally guided by data. And as I said, today's topic is Swakopmund, man. Swakopmund. We are in the coast.
Yes, the beautiful beach town of Swakopmund. So I know I'm very excited for today's show. I know there's a lot to unpack, but before we get to that, maybe as we always do with a brief, background on Swakopmund. How did Swakopmund become?
Yeah, before we dwell much into Swakopmund, let's really touch on some issues that are in the news media.
Okay.
Which is especially the consolidation of Ongwediva, Oshakati, and Ondangwa.
I feel like they heard our conversations.
Yeah, and I think, it's about time. The conversation needs to continue. I think it's a very strategic aspect. Perhaps I just need to apologize to the listeners that I was intended to do the numbers. What is the cost of 50 councillors per month? And I wanted to aggregate it to round about what it will be in 10 years time. What is the entire cost of government expenditure onto councillors and so forth? But it's a good conversation. You know, we need to build numbers. I know for the political spectrum, it could not be the right thing to do, but I know it's a discussion that has been there for many, many years. And I think it's the general public just needs to participate in it. And I think let's try out something new.
Yeah.
You know, let's see if we can really develop the second capital city. And I think Ongwediva and Ondangwa, they can be that different spark.
You think that would be the second capital?
That would be definitely the second
not
capital.
Not
Swakopmund? No. The numbers look good up there.
Numbers
look good. If you put them together, the numbers definitely can constitute to a capital city.
Yeah.
But then thereafter, equally so, there was a very deep question in one of the articles that is asking. It seems to me now, because that conversation now triggers that, it seems to me all settlements are developed above the red line since independence. It's a serious question, but I think the political leaders needs to come in there and to see that there's an equal distribution of development, an equal distribution of decision making, so that others don't feel left behind. So we need to create a balanced approach to development, because at the end of the day, we are a democracy, and our constitution basically makes those provision. Then again, up in the north, there's another article that came out that talks about on the waiting list of 35,000 people that are on a waiting list.
Yeah.
That's quite a huge number, but that number is not far-fetched from Swakopmund. Swakopmund could easily be between now 17 and 23,000 in terms of a number of people on the waiting list for housing.
Yeah.
But those are good numbers. It's good data. It attracts investment. It triggers entrepreneurs. Those are the conversations we need to have, that is with data. So that those are the conversations that we need to pull through. Now,
100%.
Coming to Swakopmund.
Yes.
Looking at the historical perspective as to how it basically developed. We all know that Swakopmund is a German settlement. It was purely a German settlement. As we all know that the British were running Walvis Bay, and when the apartheid system took over, so that means that Walvis Bay was then handed over to the apartheid government of South Africa. And obviously the German community, they were unable to trade at the harbors of Walvis Bay. They then created their own settlement. They started establishing a harbor, but even though it was a bit much very difficult because due to the rough terrains in Swakopmund. However, you need to do what you have to do when you are pushed in a corner.
Yeah.
And that is basically what mostly then give Swakopmund its strength of establishment. The name is named after the connection between the river and the ocean, which is called the Mond.
Mm-hmm.
And then it then became the Swakopmund Mond, as that Mond is that mouth that
yeah.
connection,
yeah.
That French kiss connection between the ocean and the river. And that is basically how the town, got its historical name. Now, throughout the years, as the development continue, we also know that we have a prominent graveyard of the genocide of the Herero. One of them that has been first recorded was also in Swakopmund. It's still there and it's visible and it's properly preserved.
Mm-hmm.
It has quite a very historical monuments of from the colonial settlers and so forth. And hence also its formation of its architecture that also then create, which is called the Kleiner Hamburg, what many people then call it when they come from Germany, especially your central town in terms of its architecture and building and its space on the spatial organization of those building. And obviously with the strong architectural influence from the German architecture. So that's more or less the basic overview of what Swakopmund is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we know that there's a very extensive tourism presence in Swakopmund, which really is the backbone of the town vibrancy, which is also now supported by the surrounding mining activities.
Yeah.
Now, especially for today, because there's so much information, perhaps just for our listeners, just so that they are quite in tune. So what we're going to do today is we're just going to look at the property market analysis.
Okay.
We will then, if the times then permit, we will also touch on the residential, on commercial and residential.
Mm-hmm.
But if we are unable to do that, then obviously we will need to look into a second session, a continuous session there where we're looking into the rental markets, both commercial and yeah. Now, looking at the headlines of the property data market analysis, very, very critical.
Okay.
These numbers are quite shocking. We are now in a range of 8,209 transactions.
In the last 10 years.
Okay. Which is, that gives us a median price of around about 650,000 for your average house price. Now, on the land price, so we are pricing around about 1,040 per square meter, and the aggregated value of over the 10 years is, if we round it off, it's actually 9 billion, but the true figure is 8.932 billion is the transaction value.
8.92 billion?
8.93 billion. Yeah. So that really just shows you what the property market in the coast is crazy. It's really bumper crazy. There is a super demand. We still want to understand what are the driving factors in that space.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever Swakopmund is doing, I think most of the town needs to look out for what is really happening in that space. Now, when we look at the strengths and the limitations of basically what is happening in Swakopmund, we are looking at a comprehensive transfer coverage, authoritative transfer records, integrated planning context, a honors exclusion of subsidized cluster, meaning that the from your NHE, your government perspective. On the limitation side is the non-time adjustment by default, subsidized cluster exclusion in is rule based, suburb labeled disagreements, pre-buyer demographic depths is uneven, That means that when we look at the demographic aspect, we were able then to explain further on this.
Okay.
And then your mortgage bond data is not yet ingested. So meaning that your mortgage data, there's still that, it's lacking. That data is still lacking.
Yeah.
But we are working around the clock to make sure that we bring that, that data perspective.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the national land delivery, Ondangwa still remains top, as one of the towns that have produced the most of the townships. Now, when you look at the, social profile, that is basically based on the, on that 2023 census.
Okay.
Population, 75,000. In 2011, it was on 44,000. It has an annual growth of 4%. So now all these figures, you need now to extrapolate it, and then you put it into your financial model as to see how you then be able to assess the demand. So also on your projection profilings of your sales, so you should then be able to navigate the situation. Now, out of 32, in terms of ranking, in terms of solar potential ranking, it's ranked 29. So which means that it's quite high.
Mm-hmm.
On wind potential ranks, we are sitting at 3. Three out of 22. In terms of active EIAs in the region, we are looking at 5 EIAs have been issued, 2 are still pending.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of fire pressure within a radius of 30 kilometers, it's moderate to low, but it got an ARA grating, so it means that it got a good pressure infrastructure. Now, looking at the town planning application, starting on 2021, 8 applications were received. 2022 it was 36, mm-hmm. 43, 26, and currently now on and then the highest recorded was 2025, which was on 48, and now we are sitting on 24 thus far for 2026. Maybe just to give perspective, the 2026, we only extracted the data as of yesterday.
Okay.
From Ulwazi. So this means that the applications is of the latest data. Now, on this town planning aspects, it includes rezoning, subdivision, amendment to the zoning schemes, township establishment, and obviously the different aspects of the approval and also the adjustment. We only had an adjustment of rate and taxes, basically, which was one. I know there's still a bit of bone of contention. It was not, I think it's still, it went to court, and I think it came out again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the summary, when you look at the summary of the rezoning application, of which is always what I call, for me, the rezoning applications, your land delivery aspect, that is purely what we need to establish in the country to say that is our development index.
Mm-hmm.
There's a development index and there's a property index.
Okay.
So on the property index, we look at how many, what is required, what are the price ranges. But on the development index, we look at what we can deliver, especially on land and application processes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that then forms part of a very critical part in terms of development. Now, as I said earlier in our opening headline statement, we said we are having around about 8,209 transactions of a median of 1,040 per square meter.
Yeah.
And then with an average air size of around about 600 per square meter, with around about 162 suburb analysis and a subsidized value of 16.6. Again, when we talk about the subsidized market, I'm inviting learned friends into the space. So how do we record and how do we justify the subsidized market in our development? Are we saying it's market value plus 16.6, or are we saying it's market value less 16.6? So that is always my argument. But where I stand, I'm of the opinion that is market value less.
Less. Okay.
So if you're going to buy a property, you need to look at those adjustments. We know very well in our previous discussion, we discussed the issue of some of the Ochamisa flats that were bought for over $1 million,
mm-hmm.
6, 7, 8 years ago. When you look at it now, it has lost the value of around about 20%. So, and again, this, where do we assess this market adjustments, you know? So that means that you have, if you have reached an age of 60 and you now can't afford installments, you want to sell your property, it means that your pension is going to be cropped up into to be able to settle that debt. So meaning that you are working with nothing out of it. So I think it's important that we need to understand this. With mm-hmm. the AI technology and data analysis, we are able to pick up these flaws and we need to have a different conversation.
Yeah.
So we need to look at our economic indicators. What does it say? Now, the market value less 16.6%. Does it translate into inflation? What does the Bank of Namibia have to say around it? So those are the discussions we need to bring into the room
mm-hmm.
so that we are unable to unpack this, so that we are unable to unpack the situation.
So, real quick, the subsidy percentage, who or what determines that percentage?
The subsidy is basically the subsidy. In every town, government is injecting money.
Okay.
Yeah, but then that money is then recorded as a market development, market value.
Okay.
But that is, it's already, because it's tax money already. So that tax money, the government then use it so that it subsidizes for people to be able to afford.
Okay.
Now, this subsidy, maybe to bring a bit of correction to it, is more like your fuel levy. So if fuel is going to be very high, then government say, okay, fine. They're going to extract 300 million from the fuel levy to be able to curb so that they don't put a lot of pressure into the commodity prices, onto the market.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's the same principle that then applies. But how do we then equate it? But obviously now, because if we don't account for it, someone will then take it up and say, no, this is the true market value. But as I said, it's a very in-depth conversation that we need to have. And how do we then record it? How do we then have a discussion around it? So these are the issues that are in the market. Yes, we talk about affordability issues, but maybe there are certain underlying issues that we also need to look at that got nothing to do with the material cost or construction cost or labor cost, but purely it has a legislative issue or an understanding issue. So we also need to unpack that. So we should just not blame to look at the price and we say it's too expensive. So we need to find a way how we can get around it. But as I said, now with the AI technology and data analytics,
mm-hmm.
you are able to pick up these things. And this is now where we need to start interrogating and where I'm saying data analysts are now becoming a very critical skill to be.
100%.
So it's very important that people understand it.
Yeah.
Now, when we look at the annual Swakopmund trends in terms of basic sales, starting from 2016, from 2016 it went down, and 2018 was probably the worst transaction sales. Then it started picking up gradually. So up to 2022, we got a slight dip. From 2022, it just shoot up right away.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers are looking, but we will get into the numbers more critically. And the one of the top performing areas is your Swakopmund Extension 9. It's performing also quite very well. Looking back from 2016 to where it is going now, but the bumper year was 2018. So Matutura Extension 1 that came onto the market there, 2016. But we're seeing a bit of a slightly drop, but that is obviously normal. In your low income bracket, you quickly reach maturity. There's hardly, once the area is fully established, transaction is very low because mm-hmm. people have very long term occupancy in that lower bracket, unlike your luxury end and your higher upper end middle class, where there's always fluctuation because of change of income or change of jobs or any economic losses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is also very critical when you look at the Swakopmund data, you also need to look at, especially on your mining activities in terms of employment. So, you know, usually mines, when the uranium commodity prices drop, they echo, they start echoing retrenchments, obviously, and technology and you know, to cut overhead costs. So this are also done. When you look at this, you need to look at the different mines. When did the, like, for instance, Areva went into hibernation, the mine was placed under maintenance. And then you look at the data and see what was the dip in that, in what dip did it create in that particular year that Areva was in a hibernation. So, and on those plant maintenance, there's a knock-on effect on your property market. As we said, your property market, there's a domino effect, and obviously your job sector, it's also in that space. Then Swakopmund Extension 15, also it recorded very good sales from since 2016. It dropped extensively in 2020. Then we're seeing the numbers rising again. Its best performances was recorded somewhere in 2024. That is where you have the high numbers, a high number of sales in that space. While Swakopmund Extension 16, we are looking at, this numbers looks very bad. It started well in 2016, recorded very high somewhere 2019. And then ever since then, it's been going down, and it's the only one thus far I could see that is having a negative growth aspect on the data. Looking at Mondesa 2016, there were hardly any sales. It came to a completely standstill. It then picked up gradually, but it's on the positive trend now. So what is basically now happening is that the middle class, people now in the middle class have now started realizing that, look, you can start looking for properties somewhere else, but then affordability becomes a problem. So you are now need to make, you are in a space where you start making some critical decision as to where you're going to purchase. So we've also seen it here in Windhoek now. There's a super high demand for properties in Katutura because people are looking and say, look, you rather buy in Katutura, revamp the property, create a typical lifestyle. So there are those changes that are happening, those transactions. I was talking to one of the real estate agents. It was on Thursday. We were very fortunate to have been invited by First Capital to attend their groundbreaking research in the housing market, looking at different variables and the numbers. The conversation, it looks bleak on the one side, but it also have a lot of optimism in terms of opportunities in that space. Now, what came out of that space, Dr. Minga again dropped a bombshell on that specific day. He says, look, guys, the 300,000 backlog, that's not the right number. But I know that this is not what you are expecting. But our calculations are putting us at 772,000 housing backlog. Now, that is now a very critical number. So he's opening up an egg of worms here, a different conversation, you know. So it means that many of us and the experts in the space, we were more looking at, we most probably sitting at 600,000, half a million. But just to give a bit of context in terms of what does 271,000 means. Now, our land parcels that we are currently having in the entire Namibia, we are not above 300,000. So that means we need to build Namibia times two for us to be able to address the housing backlog.
So let me hear it again. In the whole of Namibia, there's only 300,000 like developed land parcels?
Yeah, that have been created. Yeah. So, and that is across all cluster, not selective. That's across all clusters. So we are not over 300,000 yet.
Wow.
So, and obviously now, then Martin Mwinga then comes out of this.
Mm-hmm.
So now having this information under the Ulwazi data platform, so you are able now to put numbers together to say, okay. And remember, Martin Mwinga again, when the government came out of their calculation in terms of the the first statement to say that we have a 50% unemployment rate in Namibia. Martin Munga went back and he questioned that statistic and he proved his analysis and he brought us to 36%. Mm-hmm. That is quite realistic. He's an economist of note, so he's been in this space for long. Let's give the man the benefit of the doubt. But again, we need to look at now what is critical on this analysis is because it's the outcome of the 2023 census data. Mm-hmm. And that is what he stated, that most of his source was from that. He just studied that and he unpacked it from there. So his departing remark, he then said that this is where I'm at. Perhaps someone now needs to take over this research and push it a bit further and interrogate. So basically what he has done is put a question into the public to be able to start questioning. And another bombshell that he has dropped, he says, Omaheke region is the one that is having the more informal settlements per region in the country. Mm. That was another shocker. That's another bombshell that he has dropped there. Yeah. So those are just some of the news and highlights that were in that space.
Maybe we'll have to have a whole different show on statistics in general, because I'm hearing now you're saying this gentleman, he came up with a lower percentage than what was published in terms of unemployment. But I remember when this census data was released, a lot of economists and researchers were saying it's actually higher than the 50-something, whatever it is that the NSA said. Some people said it's closer to 60%.
Yeah.
So how is there such a disparity in something that should be, you know, a black and white? There shouldn't be any subjectivity to it. There should be one concrete number.
I'm saying that now that we are moving into AI ecosystem, you know, it's very important that people need to understand. I see some of my learned colleagues, I see they are coming off strongly to say this and that, this mm-hmm. and that. But there's a difference when you do an AI ecosystem. An AI ecosystem, you take the country's info. When you have an ecosystem, you take the information of the country of different sources, and you put it in that ecosystem and you extrapolate it and you do some algorithm to extract data from it. Now that we know that AI is able to do it, and Ulwazi Africa is a Namibian product that is out there for the public to look at and to be able to put in some aspects on how to look at data. Now, coming to the social aspects of Swakopmund, for instance, we are having a serious issue in terms of a social segregation in Swakop. It's becoming a class society. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So when we say,
I wouldn't even say becoming, I think it's already.
Yes. Yeah. So a class society means you will see that majority of the people only access the CBD and the commercial areas between 8 to 5. Mm-hmm. After that, it becomes very quiet. Mm-hmm. So that means that you only your affluent population then remains basically in town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a huge segregation. And when you look at barely in the CBD in terms of ownership of property ownership of commercial properties, your affluent sectional titles, it's pretty much owned by the affluent community, and most of the people, majority of them are more left out. So we are looking at now a very, very, very high class segregation that is happening. So, and then I think it's up to the local authority to say, how do we really address it? And in terms of based on the tools and the legislatives that we have in place. Now, maybe just to come back to add another layer onto it is that it's like you are planning in the face of power. So what do we mean by planning in the face of power? Yes, power, there's political power and there's economic power. Now, the masses have the political power. Now, in the economic power, you now have the Afrikaner community that is developing in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
You have the German community that is developing in a certain direction. Now, these are the two financial powers that are mostly at play in Swakopmund. So obviously, the financial powers has an influence in terms of decision making. Now, there's a prominent road in Swakopmund which you call Strand Street. Now, Strand Street has a low density. Low density meaning that they do not want to have sectional titles. They want single residential houses. Now, this is Strand Street is the street that obviously now have access to the beach. Now, if you really want the access to the beach, you need to build a high density. Now, we have seen this like in your areas such as Cape Town, Somerset West, and all those areas in South Africa, even in Mozambique. Yeah. So you need a high density approach. Now, because, as I said, planning in the face of power, those guys in Strand Street to say, no, we are not going to take any high density in our area. So we are completely against it. So and doing so is because power then dictates as to how development is done in Swakopmund. So, and these are the clashes, and these are the classes, a typical example of class society that we are having in Swakopmund. So the political spectrum now needs to start to look into this space as to say, how do we then address it? So we avoid a second wave of segregation, which is basically class. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're now moving in a different approach of segregation. And this is now where the leadership, also from a social perspective aspect, they need now to come in and then to look at how do they really address it? How does the planning fraternity basically bring together a fragmented class. So to
kind of play devil's advocate, you know, earlier you said that Swakop's the value of the transactions in the last 10 years has been $8.3 billion, correct?
$8.9 billion
even. Yeah. So, and that's the highest value we've had so far on Ulwazi. What would you say to someone who would say that 8.9 billion wouldn't exist if the structure that you just described wasn't in place?
Look, I think there are two aspects. We need to look at the natural phenomena of the natural resources. That is number one. That is key. Mm-hmm. And then obviously we have the ocean economy. That is the second one, because people could feed off from the ocean economy. They could, you know, go catch fish, then they could trade and all sorts of things. So now those are natural aspects. It got really nothing to do with the financial. And this aspect is what attracted capital to the coastal town and for people to be able to settle there, because you could basically have a livelihood around it. Now, the second element was was your water source from your Swakopmund Poort Dam and all that. So there was also a fresh water element aspect. So now if you look at it from that perspective, it's the natural element that enable that development. And those from those natural elements, that's where economic opportunities got created. So now to say that the different class, it's predating before independence, but I don't think that it's something that we need to sit back and say it is what it is. We need to leave it, but something needs to be done, and we need to talk about it so that it's to see what is the best way and able to address this this monster that is busy growing. So you then start creating, and I know maybe Julius Malema once always makes this statement to say that the moment you ignore the masses, once they start rising, it's going to be a serious problem. Now let's talking about development, let's look into your Airbnb sector. A lot of units now are moving to your Airbnb factor. Yeah. Now, when those Airbnbs are being listed, and Swakopmund is one of them of the highest Airbnbs, now it puts pressure on the rental market. Yeah. It then put pressure on the rental market. So there's not enough units open onto the, that's another concern as well. Now, because the people in the top ecology and on the financial capital, they control those Airbnb aspects. So they put pressure on the cities of the social, you know, the social class, the lower social class then start to feel the pressure. I know I saw it on social media that there was a group that organized themselves to talk about the rental issues and so forth. Now this is the other aspect that I think we highlighted it when we were talking on Shakati. Mm-hmm. Now your Airbnbs, yeah, they don't pay your commercial and income based property rate and taxes, because there's a difference from a residential rate and taxes, and there's a difference between a commercial generating property. Now, if Swakopmund is to move a step further, they really need to look at to legislate the Airbnbs. Now, this needs to be done in collaboration with the Namibia Tourism Board. This policy is long overdue. It's also one of the issues that is also then creating this the social class segregation, creating a class society. Yeah. So, and we all know that a class society, and when you look into like your in Britain is the people that were called lords, yeah. Mm-hmm. So because they own the property, so they become lords. Land, that's where the landlords comes from, because they are the owners of the land of the property. And this policy, I think it's about time that it comes through, so that we regulate your Airbnbs, so that equally so, because it's unfair for those that are having guest houses that are paying income-based rate and taxes, while the people that are having Airbnbs, they are not paying any income-based tax. And this is also when perhaps NAMRA also then needs to come in, or maybe NAMRA can then sanction a research study to look at how many properties are listed on Airbnb, then get the data in that space. And then you are able to determine what are the financial losses in any area of local authorities, or equally on the taxes as well. So I think it, and I also then this throws out another question to say, if a property is then listed on Airbnb, now your rate and taxes, yeah? So the rate and taxes, how are we going to calculate it? Again, my learned friends who are in the property valuation space and development also needs to start having this conversation as to how do we price. So now if you do a property valuation in terms of a sectional title that is generating an income, so are you, and it's because it's listed in the Airbnb, so what type of method are you going to use? So we always, our approach is always using the highest best use. And if the highest is best use of Airbnb, but the question is, does the market value makes provision for an income-based property that is generating capital on Airbnb? So that is something that again, the Swakopmund municipality needs to look into. Mm-hmm. So that is also part of how you can then also narrow down the social class aspect. So then you then allow now a few people that can then come in. And obviously we need to look at what is the rate of properties that are listed on Airbnb, mm-hmm. on a yearly basis, on mm-hmm. a quarterly basis in Swakopmund.
Yeah.
So we need to understand that. The moment if we don't understand that, our policies, we won't have proper guided policies in that space. So yeah, now coming back to the property data market analysis, especially, I'm just quickly going to run through, for 2016, we are looking at, 608 transactions, 2017, 716, 2018, 867, which is one of the, I think, the second highest. 2019, we're looking at 640. 2020, we are looking at 563.
Mm-hmm.
2021, we are looking at 919. Then 2022, 532, 23, as we are looking at 570.
Yeah.
And 2024 is the highest, which is 968, followed by 2025, which is 955. And currently now for 2026, we are looking at, we are sitting at 245. So I'm expect the 2026 numbers still to rise.
Mm-hmm.
So we could easily hit the bracket of 700. So I'm looking at the positive aspect as well in that space.
Mm-hmm.
But I said the numbers looks good. The data just tells you where you need to go and invest. But again, I said, be careful. Look at your numbers. Look at the trajectory. Property is based on a cycle, so you need to understand the cycles, the property, the boom, the recovery, the slum, and the stagnation. So you need to understand at which cycle the property is. And please do consult your closest property expert that you know if you want to do extensive investment.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just go in blindly, or consult the Ulwazi Africa platform to give you that guidance. And then you look at the data, and you also then look at the then you also ask the opinion from any property expert then to be able to guide you.
Now, cut you off. This, you know, these numbers I'm listening to, they are quite remarkable. I mean, Swakop has had years that the past towns we've discussed haven't had in 10 years. Is really like what's driving these numbers? Is it really just the natural resources in the area, or is there something else that's driving these high numbers?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So obviously the Swakop basically took advantage of development. Swakop realized they got a very strong administration. So what they then did is they did it unconsciously, knowing mm-hmm. what is really happening. Because Wolfish Bay has been stagnant in terms of development.
Yeah.
There was very little that is happening in terms of township applications and all that. So we can see basically, in the past 10 years, the growth of Swakop Mund and Wolfish Bay, the growth of Wolfish Bay recorded around about over 4,000 transactions, while Swakop Mund is sitting at 8,200 and something transactions.
Mm-hmm. So double the activity.
So it's double the activity. So the slow performance of Wolfish Bay basically turns it was in Swakop Mund's favor.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to give credits where it's due. The administration aspect in Swakop is really working hard. You can see that they are pushing out layouts. I think last year they did run about 11 townships. I'm speaking under correction.
Mm-hmm.
But they are pushing out numbers. Yeah. So there's a lot of townships coming up, a lot of development. They are attracting investment. Now, if you also want to test the rate of development, at the same time, submit a building plan, say to the city of Windhoek,
mm-hmm.
and you submit the building plans in Swakop Mund. Swakop Mund, your building plans approval rate is at a much higher space.
Mm-hmm.
Now, however, I know city of Windhoek is working hard, because the gentleman who established the system in Swakop Mund is not currently working for the city of Windhoek.
Okay.
So we are still waiting for what is his impact in that space, whether the approval spaces rate is going to move. But at the current moment, in terms of application, building plan submissions, I think we need to give credit to Swakop Mund.
Mm-hmm.
They are really pushing very hard. Those departments, they are pushing very hard. I can't really say much about the engineering perspective, but on the building plans, because in the town planning, that is a space where we are operating quite frequently. There's a huge movement in that space, and we need to give credits where it's due. Now,
That's also what one of the viewers online is saying. Linda, she said, the local authority is marketing the town as an investment hub.
Very, very much true. But the one thing, the private sector is very much involved with the local authority strategic thinking.
The private sector, you say?
The private sector. Mm. And that is now where I've seen, I really do not want to promote, to single out individual because development is a collective.
Yeah.
But you can see there's a lot of social media articles, people questioning development, people questioning decisions, what the local authority is doing. So it's a two-way stream. There's the communication is there. Mm-hmm. The communication there, the synergy is there. I think, and the guys are moving fast. They are just efficient. They deliver. For me, what I foresee perhaps in the next 5-10 years is the, because of the rate of development, I think they are going to reach their town boundaries soon, and I know they are negotiating to expand their town lands.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a huge fight to whoever's going to win this battle, but the interesting space is to bring in Mile 14 into the space, into the town lands of Swakopmund, and also then to bring in and the Floskasbergen in Swakopmund.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, Hentis Bay is also of the same vein, you know, and then the regional council, it's they believe that Floskasbergen is their golden goose. They don't want to let go of that space. Those mm-hmm. properties are now currently on demand, super, super on demand. So there's quite a huge demand there. And obviously now the Nonidas corridor, that those farm areas that is also on demand in Swakopmund.
Mm-hmm.
But in the next 5-10 years, there's really going to be a battle of town boundaries. Now, obviously the next question is now also then Swakopmund is going to move into mining right issues.
Yeah.
Now, once you get in those mining right issues in terms of who owns the mining rights versus development, I know Poor Luderitz are one of the towns that is having this conversations, but I think with the spatial development framework, I think we will be able to those issues will be addressed in terms of who owns the right and how should we then obviously develop further.
Mm-hmm.
Now that becomes now the question: what about if there is oil and we need development and there's a mining right? So you got a three ownership. It's your local authority, your government that owns all the natural resources below and above ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you have the mining right owner who's having the exploration license.
Yeah.
But that's a conversation of development for another day.
Yeah.
But we need to keep that in mind. Let's maybe just to quickly come back to look into what does the next 5 years looks like for Swakopmund. The next 5 years of Swakopmund looks extremely positive, moving to 2027, 2029.
Mm-hmm.
The trajectory is upwards. So I foresee the growth from the next 5 years to have a positive growth, but I do foresee that they will have challenges in terms of land delivery, starting from 2030 moving up onwards. But if they do their homework now, by the time we reach those 5 years, so meaning those challenges will then be addressed. But neatly say, let's compliment, let's give Swakopmund its flowers in terms of transactions.
Yeah.
They are heading to a 10 billion market now. So we are just excited to see where this number is going to be in December. If we record another 300-400 sales up, I'm positive that we can easily hit that 10 billion mark. And I think Swakopmund, big ups to you. You're moving in the right direction. I'm originally from Swakopmund. I'm just very, very proud to look at this data, man. It's exciting. Like I have properties that side and, you know, so I'm literally, in fact, we started expanding also our guest house in Swakopmund to, because the numbers just looks good, man. The numbers.
Is your guest house registered on Airbnb?
Yeah, it's also registered, but we are also at NTB registered as well.
Okay.
So we are the, we are also on the book of the local authority. We are doing things above board.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I also need to say that NTB in Swakopmund, if you are not paying your taxes levy, they shut you down.
Yeah.
They have inspectors that comes through. So there is that, you know, the NTB at the coast is very much on the ground, very, very much on the ground. And it's really, positive news that is really coming out at the coast right there. But as I'm saying, the numbers look beautiful. Now let's look at the projections. Yeah.
Okay.
Now for 2026, yeah, we are projecting a market value of 1.5 billion for 2026. While 2027, we are looking at 1.9 billion. Yeah. While 2028, mm-hmm. we are looking at the $2.4 billion mark in terms of transactions per year. That is basically what the projections are looking like. Now, once we reach, so that means now if we are reaching 2.5 billion, so that means that we are transacting around about 1,000 to 2,000, between 1,000 and 1,500 transaction. That is unprecedented. So it's a matter of time. Swakopmund needs to look at this data, understand it, you know, and see where they can, where they can improve. There are some areas that are having stagnation, mm-hmm. but as I said, there's just so much data on Swakopmund. That we are able to unpack. I'm still, we haven't touched on the demographic, the age demography.
Okay, yeah, let's look at that.
Now on the age demography, your sellers. Ooh, this is very interesting. Yeah. So your pensioners are coming in third into this space. So that means that it predominantly presents itself as a retirement village.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's attracting a lot of pension fund money. There's maturity there. Old money is sitting in Swakopmund.
Yeah.
Now, under 30, the people buying properties is 219. Under 30, between 30 and 39, we are looking at 680. Between 40 and 49, we are looking at 570. Between 50 and 59, we are looking at 300.
This is now in the last 10 years.
This is now basically in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Your youth is pretty much quite dominant into that space. It's still picking up numbers, but I'm looking forward. You see now, one of this positive projection is that Valvitia University is coming online,
mm-hmm.
and they are planning to invest around about $1 billion. In just construction value. Yeah. So they're planning to invest $1 billion, and they are bringing a student hospital and a university.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know very well that currently now there's no prominent university in Swakopmund. Now with that university, we are then looking at bringing, say around about 1,000 to 1,200 people into the market. Plus the staff complement, we can look anything between 1,500 people that are coming in once the university gets back online.
Yeah.
Those are serious numbers. Now you got a very youthful community that is also popping up. Your economic activities is going up, your food demand, so now is the right time basically to get into Swakopmund. If you do not have a foothold in that property market, get in now. Yeah. The best time to invest is not tomorrow, is today. Yeah. Start your investment journey, consult to Luazi, consult your property expert, look at your data and see which areas are giving you bumper numbers. So that becomes now very critical. Now, the other interesting on the gender space, yeah, we have the females that mm-hmm. is coming out at 1,294, while the male is at 457. And that is basically your demography.
We
and
just then have again, a quick commercial break. We can continue.
Dreaming of a better future abroad? Namdeen's Investment CC can help make it happen. Whether you're a teacher, caregiver, nurse, doctor, IT professional, driver, construction worker, graduate, or looking for work, we provide trusted visa facilitation and consultancy services for visitor visas, high-paying jobs abroad, international study opportunities, scholarships, and recognized qualifications. For more information, contact +264 81 376 0041 or WhatsApp +264 81 806 2044 Today, Namdeen's Investment CC, opening doors to global opportunities.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. We just saw a comment from a listener here in the comment section where Linda said that the town has also been acknowledged as a planning authority and this has made planning of townships more efficient. Is that accurate, Mr. Mishila?
Yes, yes, very much true. Yeah, very much true. But now the effect, the effect of that change, it still needs to be seen. But we will then have an understanding for it, especially in the two last quarters of the year. So we will have to see what the impact, but we are keeping track on that space. And big ups to the ladies, man. The ladies are buying properties in Swakopmund.
Yeah,
yeah, it's female.
I feel like we've said that about every town.
Yeah, it's the new powerhouse is the ladies. the boy child needs help there. Yeah. So the numbers on the transaction percentages, we are looking at 73%, which is female, and we are looking at 26%. Of course, there's also other factors like your residential, industrial, and all that. Mm-hmm. But those are now for businesses and all that. But we will touch more on it on the other side when we do the rental market analysis for Swakopmund. But guys, big ups to Swakopmund. Well done. As much as we want to give critics, but the critic is basically just to develop an understanding that there are other aspects that are not perfect, but let's also improve into those spaces. Please don't be fixated on the betterment fee cost. Please reduce that. Don't bottleneck your development. Allow people then to basically come through. Review your calculations for people in the lower bracket also to participate in that in the development framework. But all I want to say, guys, well done. Keep it up. And, man, this is your Lwazi platform on Eagle FM. Please.
100%. And we'll be back on Monday. That is from 4 to 5 p.m. So make sure you're tuned in for that. And if you had missed any of our previous conversations, maybe it was your first time tuning in. Some of you, I see you online. I think it was your first time tuning in. Fear not. You can just go to our website or the Eagle FM mobile application. The website is www.eaglefm.com.na and the mobile application is free to download on the Google Play Store as well as the Apple App Store. Simply type in Eagle FM Namibia. Go to the podcast section on either platform and type in Ulwazi and you'll be able to digest, to review everything that Mr. Nashila has been bringing us over the past few weeks. There's also been articles about what he's been discussing on the Villager website. That's thevillager.com.na. So yes, wishing you all a fantastic weekend ahead, and we will see you on Monday.
Cheers.